This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
From Leonard, are you insane? You've never given out every side and every total on a day. No, I haven't. I don't think I have. Maybe I have. I mean, it's Thanksgiving. You got to have action on the games, especially when the games are crappy games. At least the first two are. I mean, anybody that bets understands, you know. This isn't the, it's on Monday Night Football, you have to play it in chase mode. This is the beginning of one of the best weekends of the year in sports. All the football tomorrow, all the college football on Friday, plus an NFL game on Friday, all of the football on Saturday, on Rivalry Saturday for college football, and then a full NFL slate on Sunday. Ending on Monday night. All right, power rankings, Denton. Doing it a day early because we are off tomorrow. I got Detroit still at 1. I've got Kansas City at 2. That's probably wishful thinking, but I still would not want to be on the other side of them in the postseason. Philly's 3 for me. I contemplated putting Philly 2. It certainly seems like Detroit and Philadelphia have separated themselves in the NFC, although maybe Green Bay and Minnesota. Certainly Green Bay, they might have something to say about that when we get to the postseason. I got Buffalo at 4, and I've kicked Pittsburgh out of my top 5 and put Baltimore into it. The Ravens needed a win, and they got one impressively Monday night in L.A. against the Chargers. Man, you talk about a venue, by the way, that creates no home field advantage for the two L.A. teams. Is there, in the history of, you know, the NFL anyway, less of a home field advantage than SoFi for the two teams that play there?
FedEx the last 10 years.
Phoenix, you'd say?
No, FedEx the last 10 years.
FedEx, yeah. I mean, understood. But that literally, there's a reason for it at FedEx. The reason, the Rams have been a Super Bowl team. The Chargers are a decent team. They just don't care about pro football in Southern California.
They have that one lady that goes viral every time they play. You know the one I'm talking about?
No, for Rams games or Chargers games?
Chargers games, it is. They, like, always show her. She went viral again for whatever reason. She, like, cheers way too hard to be a Chargers fan because they don't have real fans.
It when you play with the Chargers and the Rams, you have to realize you're playing for a team that will play basically 17 road games. Because more times than not, it is a disadvantage at home. You're not the home, you know, and why, like, yes, Washington's faced that for 5, 6, 7, 8 years or whatever it's been, maybe even longer than that. And hopefully that starts to change. But I don't know if it will change in LA. You know, the Rams were originally in Los Angeles. Actually, I think they were originally in Cleveland, and then became the Los Angeles Rams for many, many years, then moved to St. Louis, as we know, back to LA. And there at least is some LA tradition, and there are Charger fans, I would assume, that make the trek north to go to Charger games at SoFi. But have you noticed at any point in time since SoFi opened up either one of those teams having a home field advantage?
Never.
Hell, the 49ers in that NFC Championship game, that was a road game for the Rams in that playoff game.
I mean, those two teams could play each other and not have a home field advantage.
The 49ers have a decent home field advantage even in Santa Clara.
No, I mean the Rams and the Chargers. They could play one another in SoFi and not have a home field advantage.
Yeah, I mean, who would they root for? Okay.
They'll have more Niners jerseys, more Seahawks jerseys, something crazy.
Detroit, KC, Philly, Buffalo, Baltimore. Yeah, it's almost like an international game crowd. Detroit, KC, Philly, Buffalo, Baltimore, my top five. What's yours?
I have Detroit at one. I'm going to keep Buffalo at number two. I think they're playing really well. You know, Kansas City knows how to win. There's no doubt about that, which is why I have them at number three. You know, the way that they beat Carolina was like a classic Kansas City win this year, but there's something about Buffalo that I think they have things rolling, so I'm going to keep them at two. I'll take Kansas City at three, and then I have Philadelphia at four. It is weird. I mean, I think since I've been doing this show with you, this is the closest that the top four have been. I mean, there was a point last year where I think we had the same four teams on a weekly basis, but it feels like these ones are all super close. Like, I could see Philadelphia beating any of the teams ahead of them and vice versa in that group, so I think those are super close. And then I'm going to put the Packers at number five. Mm. You know, yeah. I was debating between them and the Ravens, and I think Lamar played really well this Monday against Los Angeles. But I like the way the Packers' offense is moving. And I know that San Francisco was hurt, and they didn't have Brock Purdy. And offensively, they've been super limited this year because of a lot of the injuries. But they went and hung 38 on them. I thought that was really, really impressive. So as long as Jordan Love cuts down on the turnovers, because he is a gunslinger, he will throw some throws that you're like, dude, please don't. Sometimes I'm sure Packers fans are watching that dude through finger goggles, but I'm going to pick the Packers at number five.
Yeah, they're really good. They're good defensively, too. All right, just a mention to a team that, you know, I think the last couple of weeks we've both talked about Tampa and their opportunity to make a run in the NFC South. I wouldn't discount New Orleans right now. You know, they're tough defensively. They've got an outstanding player, obviously, in Alvin Kamara. He has played great this year. This game Sunday against the Rams will determine whether or not the Saints are actually playing for stakes down the stretch or just playing out the string. I know the two wins over Atlanta and, you know, Atlanta's field goal kicker missed three kicks in that game. They beat the Browns. It was tied in the fourth quarter. I know it's not overly impressive, but they've just been different since Derek Carr's come back. Do they get Olave back this week? I don't know if they do or not, but the Saints are capable, fully healthy. Remember before the season started, Aaron Schatz, DVOA inventor, told us, I said, give me the team that you really think will overperform. And he said he thought New Orleans would overperform and that they would win the NFC South. And they just had a ton of injuries and they lost their quarterback for a while. I'm not the biggest Derek Carr guy, but he is a starting quarterback in the NFL. And this game Sunday against the Rams is huge for them. I mean, you would think, well, why? Well, if they beat the Rams then are in a little bit of free fall, and the Saints all of a sudden have won three in a row, and they're back to within two games of 500 with the Giants next up. And then they're looking at that Washington game at home, and Washington doesn't look like they did before, and that becomes a crucial game. I think the Saints are going to be an interesting team to watch the rest of the way. They made the coaching change. They seem to be rejuvenated. They're not lacking in talent on that team in playmaking ability with, you know, Taysom Hill and Kamara and Olave, etc. I could see them making a bit of a run back into this thing in that Washington game on December 15th being a game that, you know, is like pick 'em going in. I could see that. You got a team to keep an eye on?
I hope what you just said is not true. I'm going to pick Minnesota.
Well, if they win the next two,
it will.
That's the line. Yeah. I'm calling it right now. It's pick 'em.
I like Minnesota. I'm just keeping an eye on them. I thought they were going to crumble once they started losing. I mean, they lost, what, two in a row at the early point after starting 5-0? I thought that was going to break them, and they've responded really well to that, winning four in a row. So they put together a couple of really good win streaks. So I'm gonna look at Minnesota as they might be the real deal when I thought they were going to collapse.
They have to have one of the weakest schedules of the season, right? Let me see what the updated schedule strength, because, God, they don't play anybody each week. It doesn't seem like. As of the easiest schedules in 20, based on projected win. Oh, this is before the season started. I don't have the updated information.
They got the Cardinals this weekend, which should be a fun one. We'll see how much Kyler wants to
run.
They got the Cardinals this weekend. We'll see how much Kyler wants to run. I feel like he didn't run a lot against Seattle.
Their schedule the rest of the way is tough, but you know, when they lost those two games to the Lions and Rams, they've got wins over the Colts, Jags, Titans, and Bears. Earlier in the season, they had the Giants. They had the Jets. They had the 40. Well, they beat the 49ers and Texans and Packers. So, but man, that middle of the schedule that they just ran off four in a row, that's pretty good. Three of them were on the road too, and they were losable games. Minnesota's interesting, man. They are interesting. Well coached, though. O'Connell and Brian Flores have turned out to be quite the combination. That game Sunday against the Cardinals is a huge game. They have three straight at home. You know, Denton, is it possible that the season comes down to Minnesota at Detroit for the division? It's possible.
It's possible.
Detroit's got a brutal schedule.
Yeah, they got Buffalo still, right? Not this weekend, obviously, but next weekend, I think.
They have Buffalo. They have the Niners on the road. They still play the Packers. They play the Vikes.
I don't know if that Niners game is going to be all that big of a deal.
Yeah, you know, but it's maybe not. Doesn't look that way right now.
Yeah, especially, well, I guess that's going to be at the end of the season, so that might be something. But then you have the Vikings. Yeah, that Vikings game could be for a lot.
Minnesota keeps winning. I mean, it could come down to a season ender. Can you imagine if you've got two teams sitting there with two losses, like 2-14 and two teams playing final weekend of the year, or, you know, 13-3, whatever it would be?
I definitely feel like if that game means something, that it's going to be the division, not the bye. I think if Detroit is at the point where they have not locked up the division by then, I think Philadelphia will surpass them as the one seed.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy because Philly still has, you know, Ravens on the road. They have the Steelers. They have to come here. But they also have the Panthers, Cowboys, and Giants. I mean, Philly right now with 9 wins, they are staring at a minimum of 12 wins. I mean, they have the Cowboys and Giants and Panthers all in Philly. So that gets them to 12. I mean, let's call it now. Philly's winning the division because Washington's not getting to 12. At this point,
no,
they're not winning 12. 5 of their final 6, more likely than not.
No, after what we have seen the last 4 weeks, no,
probably not. Philly, it's kind of hard to think that Philly's not going to win the division when they've got 3 home games left against the Panthers, Cowboys, and Giants. They also play the Steelers at home. Their road games are this Sunday at Baltimore. What a game that'll be! And then at Washington on the 22nd of December. All right, we're going to carry some Dan Quinn at 12:30. We'll do some NFL burning questions from Denton when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
They're hot. They're really hot. They're burning. It's Denton's 5 burning questions.
All right, Denton's going to give me 5 burning NFL questions. Dan Quinn's going to address the media out in Ashburn at 12:30. We're going to carry that live here. I would assume he'll explain the situation with the kicker on Sunday. That would be one Austin Seibert. For those of you who missed it, he's on injured reserve now for, I guess, the season or the foreseeable future. I would guess it's for the remainder of the season, and Zane Gonzalez will be kicker. All right, go ahead, Denton. Fire away.
All right, so our first burning question actually has to do with the Commanders. They're losers of three in a row. They got a Tennessee team that just upset Houston this past weekend coming to town post-Thanksgiving. Will the Washington Commanders, who at one point were 7-2, will they make the playoffs?
Yes, they're going to make the playoffs. Look, they may only need to win two of their final five to make the postseason. At 9-8, there's some advantages that they'll have. First of all, tiebreaker with Arizona, a team they've beaten. They've got a very good conference record because two of their five losses have come against AFC teams. I think they still have a good chance to get to 10. I saw some signs Sunday, especially on offense, but not against a great team. I need to see a lot more, obviously. Look, they lost of their three losses in a row. Only one of them was a bad loss. All right, a lot of teams are losing to Pittsburgh this year. A lot of teams are going to lose to Philadelphia, especially on short week. The Dallas loss was jarring. I get it. It was bad, and it really stung because it really had nothing to do with the fact that it was the Cowboys. It had to do with Washington had pummeled bad teams this year. You know, they had beaten the snot out of, you know, the Browns and the Panthers. And, you know, they had beaten the Giants twice. Not comfortably, but they had beaten the Giants twice. And I think there was an expectation with, you know, the mini-bye and some rest that they would do the same to Dallas. I had that expectation anyway. And so it really makes you start to question if you weren't questioning before. And I wasn't off of the two losses. But definitely areas of concern. But, yeah, I think, you know, I think Sunday's huge, massive, but I think they can beat the Titans. They can win three of their final five to get to 10, which would be a comfortable spot as a 7 seed, more likely than not, because it looks like now really what everybody's fighting for is that 7 seed in the NFC playoffs. Washington's a long shot, or a much longer shot, to win the division. They're three back in the loss column. And have already lost once to Philadelphia. So Minnesota and Green Bay certainly holding down spots 5 and 6 with really good records, 9-2 and 8-3. So it's Washington, it's Arizona, it's, you know, all of the NFC West teams, it's Tampa potentially, Atlanta. You get to 9, there's a really good shot. You can snag it. You get to 10, I think it's a given. I think they get to 10-7 and they lock up a 7 seed, which, just so you know, if they're the 7 seed in the NFC playoffs, they're going to go to either Detroit or Philadelphia because one of those two teams will be the 2 seed. So I'd love that. Just the experience of it would be phenomenal, especially for the young quarterback. But I say yes. What do you say?
I still believe that the answer is yes, but that answer likely changes if they lose to Tennessee. That'd be a string of 4 losses in a row, the last two of them being bad. There's no way that you lose to Tennessee and it's not considered a bad loss. To me, that's a team you should beat if you have aspirations of getting to the postseason. So I'd be very worried if they lose this weekend.
I've been considering what I would call it. I just don't want to consider that they lose. It would not be the same as losing to Dallas, because even before Dallas, we both talked about it. The Tennessee game is going to be different. They are very good defensively. They can run the football. They're, you know, Bill Callahan and that offensive line and that run game. You know, you just have to be a bit concerned about that, but now I'm more concerned about it because they lost to Dallas. If they lost to Tennessee, it wouldn't be a good loss, that's for sure. I don't think it would be the Dallas loss, but it would feel like it. What's your next question?
All right, question number 2. Does Daniel Jones play in Minnesota this year?
Well, not if Sam Darnold stays healthy. I mean, he hasn't been hurt, has he? I don't think anybody else has played in Minnesota.
No, I mean, I don't
played every game.
I don't think he's been hurt. I was just curious. Because, I mean, anytime you bring in a guy midseason that was starting somewhere else, that has to put a little bit of pressure on Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I don't think so. Sam Darnold has been etched in there since the beginning of the year. Once J.J. McCarthy was out, he's had so many good moments. He's had some rough moments, but they're 9-2. I say no unless he gets hurt. I do think that we talked about this earlier. If you're just joining, Daniel Jones signs with Minnesota, that this is a potential, you know, hedge against J.J. McCarthy being ready to start next season and Sam Darnold moving on, because I think Sam Darnold, for all intents and purposes, with his performance this year, has priced himself out of Minnesota, out of returning to Minnesota. You know, he's going to get a deal somewhere to start. And they want, you know, they want J.J. McCarthy. All right, what's next?
All right, question number three. Right now, who do you trust more, Houston or the Chargers?
I think I trust the Chargers more, but it's close, man. Houston, we called this last week or 2 weeks ago. Something's not right there in Houston, and they lost to the Titans, and they've lost three out of their last four out of their last six. They've, you know, lost players here and there, obviously Diggs to a season-ending injury. I think I still trust Harbaugh and company more, Herbert and company more. But like I said, there's been a little bit of some of that defense exposed in the last two games that seemed like the constant all along. And they may have lost J.K. Dobbins. But I'll say Chargers barely.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. I like Houston. I like C.J. Stroud. But remember when he was getting MVP conversation at the beginning of the season? That was a little aggressive. It was a little aggressive. I think he's come a little bit back down to earth.
He's been fine this year. Just a lot more turnovers and a lot more sacks. But that offensive line's a mess.
Yeah, that offensive line is not good at all. All right, question number four. If the 49ers lose to Buffalo, are they done? It'll be their loss. It'll be their seventh loss. And at that point, they'd have to win their division to get in, more likely than not.
Yeah, I don't think so, because I think the division is just so bunched up, right? I mean, you know, this week alone, yeah, the 49ers are in Buffalo, but you've got the Cardinals on the road against Minnesota, you know, as an underdog. The Seahawks are barely favored on the road against the Jets. The Rams are on the road as a tiny favorite against the Saints. You know, the 49ers still have games against some of these division opponents left. I think they'll probably lose to Buffalo. By the way, major snow in the forecast for Buffalo Sunday night. But, you know, they've got the, you know, Bears, Rams, you know, the Cardinals still left. I'm not counting them out because I know what they're capable of if they're healthy.
I'd be worried because they haven't been healthy this year. I don't know.
That's been their issue.
There's something about them, though, where they don't seem to everybody be on the same page.
That's true.
They've been undisciplined. All right, final one here. Will Aaron Rodgers play in 2025?
Yes. That was one of my NFL buy and sells. I'm buying Aaron Rodgers in a Jet uniform in 2025. You say what?
I say no. I think in class, like, I love how you phrased it in classic narcissistic mode that he's going to come back because he doesn't want to end like he ended this year. I think it is still classic narcissist behavior. It's going to be the opposite way where he decides he's done. He's going to take his ball, go home, and he is the one that made the decision. And he's going to really emphasize on every talk show that he goes on that it was his decision to leave, not the Jets.
All right, let's take a break. Dan Quinn's getting ready to speak out in Ashburn. We'll carry some of that live. All right, Dan Quinn meeting with the media out in Ashburn. Let's get to it.
All right. How's everybody doing?
Good.
All right, man. Good to see you. As we get started today, for us, as you know, Competition Wednesday, and for us, big emphasis on third down, both sides going against one another to try to emphasize some things. So been good morning so far, prep-wise, Tennessee. They're a tough team, and we're definitely expecting their best. And as it gets to it, it's finally December football on Sunday. So December 1st, and we're absolutely fired up about that. So let's get rocking with you guys today and get ready for the game.
I want to start with something new. Marshawn Lattimore, what's he gonna be able to do today and maybe this week?
You know what's awesome? We're going to get some, you know, first, you know, shots at practice with him today. And we're really following a rigorous process with him, John. And that's not just with Marshawn, but, like, you know, especially with soft tissue injuries. And we got a great staff, and they're working, you know, together also with him and the feedback that goes with it, and also, you know, keep him safe as well. And but we are pumped to get him back out on the field. It's hard to predict, you know, on soft tissue injuries, and so it'll be awesome to have him back out, you know, working into practice today.
What will Brian Robinson be able to do?
The two guys that will be out today will be Austin Eckler and Andrew Wiley. Both are in the concussion protocol, and everybody else will be practicing at some level.
With Austin, obviously concussions are a scary thing. He's had two this year. What's your view of that in terms of just in general for any player when you have two in the same season, getting them back out there quickly at all? How do you kind of view that?
You really you follow, you know, what the medical advice is and how that goes. So the protocols are there, you know, and they're rigorous for a reason, you know, to protect the players and keep them safe. And so you know, just on a case-by-case basis, and we'll follow that all the way through. And so it's awesome to see him, you know, doing obviously much better from Sunday, because it's a scary thing for him, teammates, everybody, you know, going through it. So it's excellent to see him doing better. Like I said, him and Andrew are both working through the concussion protocol, and, you know, we'll give you updates as it goes.
And with the I guess the kicking situation, I guess one was with Austin Seibert. What was the reason to put him on IR beyond the obvious? I guess he's hurt. But then secondly, with regards to the kickoffs, you said the other day it's not that easy to get touchbacks or kick it out of the end zone. But you guys are like pretty much at the bottom of the league at that. I'm just wondering how much is that the strategy versus not his bag?
Sure. Let's start at the top first. And so regarding the injury, so Austin reported the injury on Monday, Ben, and he was evaluated, and he's got a groin injury, which is different than what he had previously. And so that'll knock him out for a few weeks. So that was the decision to put him onto IR. And then as far as like kicking and kicking off and that, like, we do love the cover kick. So there is times when you say, okay, I want to knock it out of the end zone or do that and, you know, create a touchback. And that's what I'm referring to. There's times when you can, you know, and there's also times when you won't be able to just due to weather and wind and as that goes. So I hope that answers both sides of that.
Sorry, back to Marshawn.
Sure.
As from a coaching perspective, not necessarily health perspective, are there certain things you need to see from him since he is a veteran to feel comfortable to put him into the game once he is healthy?
Just the practice reps and getting into the flow. I think that would be the one, Nikki, for him. The communication in the system, all those are the things he's already done in the walkthrough. So about getting comfortable and just really the confidence in it. And so, like I said, that's why going through the process with the medical staff and his engagement in that too, because like that's part of our protecting the team is also the player and making sure that, like, he's safe and when he is ready to go, that, like, no limitations on that.
This might be a dumb question, but there's been much to do outside the building about where Terry McLaurin lines up. Primarily on the left, or if he's moved around, does that matter? You know, for just, I mean, I'm curious what your thoughts are from a defensive perspective too. Does that matter, really?
It can for sure. It's there's no dumb questions here. Now I'm just as I was going into it, like, it does matter on certain plays and concepts to go. Certain teams it matters more than others if they're the, you know, primary part of where you're going to go. Years back, the Colts were pretty good, and they just played left and right. But that's all they always did, and that was effective, you know, with Reggie and Marvin, how they utilized those guys. So I would say it's a little bit specific to the club, Nikki, and the reason I say that is you can be left and right like Coach Moore did, you know, utilizing those guys, and you can in breaks from the same location to the same side to catch the same pass all the time. So you could make cases for that as well as moving people into different locations. I think the long-winded answer is probably there's a combination that works, you know, for both.
When it comes to improving the run game, is that a play calling thing, a toughness thing, a schematic thing? What do you think, like, goes into that?
Well, I'd say number one, like, winning performances in all parts are what we're wanting in the run game, the passing game, and we want execution, we want play style, all of that. We want it to happen a lot, so we need to train it a lot. And so that's what today is about, being out at practice and going through the things that we need to, lines of scrimmage. Like, I'd love to say there's one thing, you know, that any team is working on. That's not how it goes, Sam. Like, there's a lot. There's no shortcuts to it. You got to put the work in. You got to go through the combinations. You got to go through, you know, this front versus different front, this team versus that team. So it's literally about improvement. And it's honestly what we're going to relentlessly chase. So that's why I love practices like we, you know, today and tomorrow and this week, where we're able to fully do everything that we need to do. And there's no shortcuts to that, man. You just continue to just absolutely chase after it.
What makes Tennessee's run defense so good? And is that a particular challenge, I guess, this week?
It's an excellent challenge. Really stout inside. I thought, honestly, that their whole defense has really played tough. They've played well on third down. They're, you know, square in how they play. The linebackers can get downhill. I've been very impressed by what I've seen so far from them. They got good size inside, mixed between four down and five down. So, for sure, a challenge.
You've talked throughout about how you take everything week by week by week, and there's a plan. Does any of that planning or urgency or any of that change after three straight losses?
For the myself, there's always a bigger picture of things, that what's a trend and where do you want to go, and I'll express that to the staff and to the team. But you do dig into the team, and then you emphasize the things that you want to work on this time right now. And so you don't pick 15 different things to work in 1 week of practice. This is something you want to improve on. Let's put the work in to do that. So after three losses, it's challenging. It's the most challenged we've been so far. It's confusing, frustrating, all of those things. That's also part of competing and knowing how to handle those emotions and dig in on the things that you need to dig in on. And that's what we intend to do.
And then you're listening to Dan Quinn. We'll take a little bit more of this out in Ashburn.
Whatever it is. But the numbers of fourth down attempts to go for it have just kind of diminished a bit. Is that a result of less efficient offense, or are there more factors to not going for it on fourth as much over the last 3 weeks?
Most of the time it's distance, you know, that comes into the factor, whether you're how far away. And I would say going into it, there's plenty of times where if we get to this mark, we would be going. Sometimes you meet that mark and you go. Other times you don't, where you have to kick or punt, and other times it never even comes up, you know, because I would say, hey, if we get to this spot, you know, this is a time we're going to go. So I wouldn't dig too much into it. I've stayed consistent with that, but part of not playing as well on third down over the last few weeks, I think, would probably lean into that as much, because it's not necessarily an attempts thing as it is a distance thing.
You mentioned the challenge of three straight losses. In your experience throughout this league, what worked best to get you out of that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I visited with staff and the team, because you can press and feel tighter about it because you want it so badly to go. And I wanted to make sure the play style and identity. Jake, that's such an important thing to make sure, like, above all else, this scheme, that time, that fourth down, that, you know, whatever we thought. It's so important to make sure that comes across. When you and our fans and families and everybody watch us play, they say, okay, I feel that. And that's where you start. You want to make sure whatever's caused any clutter or gray, let's move that out and make sure featuring the things that we do really well and dig in on those really hard. So there's not, like I said, a formula to it other than, you know, we want these performances to be right. There's no shortcuts to it, but it does come from practice, Chick. Honestly, that's like where it's driven from, and you go for it from that spot.
Away from your team, this is the 17th anniversary of the passing of Sean Taylor. Some of us were here during that time. I think you were a D-line coach with the Jets. What do you remember about seeing that guy play?
Yeah, man, I'm really glad that you brought that up, and I did was not aware of 17 years for that. A presence, I think, is one of the first things that you think about, even from, you know, entering into, like, you know, what a defender can be and look like, and the impact that a ball player can make on a team and the energy that they can provide. And so that's the first thing, you know, kind of gives me chills just on my arms right now thinking about what presence can mean to a team and to a group. And Sean, you know, had that in abundance.
Dan, you said that word urgency, and clearly everybody in that building has an urgency to end this losing streak. Is there a balance you have to strike of maybe not pressing, or a concern of the players might try to do too much on the field? to kind of help turn the tide?
Yep, that's a fair question, and definitely something that you want to over try. I'll make this one. You don't have to put the cape on, man. All of us got to do our role really well. And that's, you know, kind of what you want to drive home and stay consistent with. And the things that help with that are the reps at practice and doing what we do really well. Like this group, I have a ton of confidence in. I know what they stand for and how hard they work. And that part will come, and our play style will come. And so there's just zero doubt about it in my mind. I love what they stand for and their fight. And so we've got to make sure we can execute and play like we are capable of in all three phases, and we'll like the results.
It's the holiday season, always a special time. It's a time of reflection as well. So I'm curious, what are you thankful for? What are you grateful for this year?
A lot, honestly. And being here, you know, with this group at this time in my life is I have a lot of gratitude for, because those moments that you get to share in a locker room, a meeting room, on the field, already in a short time, we've built a really strong bond. And so for me to have all these new relationships in, you know, from, you know, February to now has been really cool. And I love seeing those grow and get even stronger as we're hitting it. So having this chance to be here in this city with this team, aid number one.
Bringing in some of the veterans before the season, like Bobby Wagner and Zach Ertz and Austin Eckler and company, part of it, I'm sure, was to, you know, bring some experience to the locker room. And as you go through this tough stretch here, how have you seen that presence kind of manifest itself?
Leading, honestly. And it is everybody doing it in their own authentic way. And so it's not always me, you know, being out in front of the one talking. You hear it from Zach. You hear it from Wags. You hear it from others that are doing that in their own way. And I love that about them, to say, I'd like to hit the team. I'd like to talk to this. And my answer is always yes, because they want to demonstrate they've been in the fights. They know what it is. Lean on me. I'll help you. They had talked just today, you know, to some of the guys about what we can do. And it's really awesome to see from a coaching perspective when these other men who you have such respect for and regard for step out there, because that's the hard part of leading. You know, you don't get to step out there and step back when it's comfortable for you. If you are, you're out there. And people like that you referenced, these are the people you'd want to be led by. And because they live it, they're able to tell it, and they're also able to receive it, you know, in the performance or whatever went into the space. And I think those are really important things for a leader to be able to do.
Dan Quinn, there's probably a little bit more to it, but, you know, a reminder that it was 17 years ago today that we lost Sean Taylor, very tragically, sadly. Certainly a week that I don't think any fan of this team will ever forget. And what was so awful about it is how well he had started to play, beyond the human aspect of it and the lost, you know, son, lost husband, lost father, lost friend, all of those things. But as a player, he was really coming into his own. You know, fourth season, he had already that year 5 interceptions in the 8 or 9 games that he had played. He was on his way to, and he was voted to the Pro Bowl, his second consecutive Pro Bowl team. The team was, you know, ended up finishing strong without him. But, man, it was, you know, I think we sometimes build up a little too much in someone's tragic passing, in our minds, what that person was or what he would be. In many ways, I think we undersell what Sean Taylor was on the verge of being. Sean Taylor certainly had some issues during those first couple of years. Remember issues even with the head coach, where Gibbs at one point, I think in 2005, said, I tried to get in touch with him. He wouldn't call me back during the offseason. Sean was his own guy, and he was certainly ready when he got there. You know, he played a little bit too out of position, was overly aggressive in those first couple of years learning the position. But when we got to 2007, that's when we started to see the best safety in football. And that's just what it was. He had turned into the best safety in football. The game at Green Bay that year where he ended up with two interceptions, but it could have been four of Brett Favre. They lost that game. It was such a painful loss because they had so many opportunities in Lambeau against Favre and the Packers. But Sean was just everywhere. Now, Favre threw a lot of picks during the course of his career, but Sean was incredible in that game. And I think, you know, he was hitting that moment professionally where he was about to enter the prime years of his career. You know, years 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, that next 4 years. And I have said this many times, have actually gotten in arguments with some of you over the years about this, because some of you do remember a more erratic player. The erratic part of his game was really those first 2 years, not that last year. That last year was the year it was like, wow. I mean, we had seen the wow plays in 2005. You know, the fumble return for a touchdown against the Eagles on what was the final game of the year, which clinched a playoff berth. The fumble return for a touchdown in the playoff game against Tampa Bay, a game that he did get kicked out of for spitting into Michael Pittman's face during that game. There was definite inconsistencies in his game in those first couple of years as a young player, but that 2007 season, he was on his way to a first-team All-Pro season. He finished, by the way, he got a second-team All-Pro that particular year. The first-team All-Pros, and I looked this up once I realized it was the 17-year anniversary of it. Bob Sanders and Ed Reed were the two starting first-team All-Pro safeties. He was a second-team All-Pro safety with Polamalu. He had a shot at first team all pro had he, you know, played another 7 games. He only played 9 games that year. But he was entering the portion of his career where he was going to be, if he remained healthy, I think he was turning into a Hall of Fame type of player. I mean, at his size, nobody covered more ground. We haven't seen many players in the last 25 years at his size, 6'2", 6'3", 235, 240, cover the ground that he covered as a safety. We have not seen anybody play that position hit as hard as he did. I don't think we've seen many people play the position the way he did so instinctually. He really had a great anticipatory talent of what was happening. And he was coming into his own, and he was coming into the prime years of his career, and it would have been a show. He would have been putting on a show for those teams. Would those teams have fared any differently in 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12? Who knows? The team was still owned, as we know, by Dan Snyder, who, by the way, that likely was the aftermath of the Sean Taylor tragedy. That was probably the most human and finest moment for Dan Snyder during his ownership. He was incredibly generous and incredibly empathetic to everybody involved. And all of the players that were incredibly close with Sean still to this day talk about how great Dan was and how great Joe was during that stretch. You know, that season, remember, went to that week, and I'll never forget it. I was in the stadium, did the pregame show leading up to that Buffalo game. I'll never forget that entire week as long as I live. But, you know, you could have heard a pin drop when they had the moment of silence. And then you had the 10 players put on the field by Greg Williams on the first play of the game. And then you had just the weirdest of circumstances. Fred Jackson, number 21, on his first carry of the game, running for 21 yards. Washington losing that game. Remember when Gibbs called the second timeout, which gave the kicker 15 yards to beat him 17-16. But then they got it together. They won on a Thursday night. They beat the Giants, Vikings, and Cowboys after that. And they ended up in a playoff game. And it certainly seemed like it was a little bit of destiny after what everybody had endured. But he'll be missed, and you think about him every year, and beyond that, how many times you'll see highlights pop up on social media. It was quite the week, that's for sure. All right, like I said at the beginning of the show, just in case I forgot, but I haven't forgotten, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Enjoy it. No Washington game. Seems like they've played a lot on Thanksgiving Day in recent years. Sit back, enjoy family, friends, be safe. Again, I mentioned Billy Kilmer was a guest and will be a guest on my podcast tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day, reliving 50 years ago tomorrow, the Clint Longley game. Not exactly a pleasant topic, but he was great. Denton, happy Thanksgiving, brother. I'll see you. I'll talk to you later in the week.
First off, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.